and casually shot Carlton Brody in the groin. Blood, matter, and body fluids gushed over the love seat. Brody howled in agony, doubled over again, fell out of his chair, and writhed on the ground. "All right," June cried. "All right, all right! For the love of God, stop it, please!" The words tumbled out. "Shut him up," the man said, "or I'll have to." June rose and rushed over to her husband, doubled up and crying out in pain. She put a hand over his shoulder. Blood was running freely from his knee, between his legs. With an ugly, gushing noise, he vomited all over his trousers and shoes. "Talk," said the man, still casual. "We were out there," she said, almost spitting the words in her fright. "Out in the swamp, at Spanish Island."
"For how long?"
"Since the fire." The man frowned.
"The fire at Longitude?"
She nodded almost eagerly.
"What were you doing out there in the swamp?"
"Taking care of him."
"Him?"
"Charles. Charles Slade." For the first time, the man's mask of calm unconcern fell away. Surprise and disbelief bloomed on his fine features.
"Impossible. Slade died in the fire."
He stopped talking, and his eyes widened slightly, gleaming as if in comprehension.
"No, that fire was a setup."
The man looked at her and spoke sharply.
"Why? To destroy evidence of the lab?"
She shook her head.
"I don't know why. Most of the lab work was done at Spanish Island."
Another look of surprise. June stared at her husband, who was moaning and shivering uncontrollably. He seemed to be passing out, maybe dying. She sobbed, choked, tried to control herself.
"Please."
"Why were you hiding there?"
the man asked. His tone was disinterested, but the gleam had not left his eyes.
"Charles got sick. He caught the avian flu. It changed him."
The man nodded.
"And he kept you and your husband on to look after him?"
"Yes, out in the swamp, where he wouldn't be found, where he could work, and then, when his disease got worse, where he could be taken care of."
She was almost choking with terror. The man was brutal, but if she told him everything, everything, maybe he would let them go, and she could get her husband to the hospital.
"Who else knew about Spanish Island?"
"Just Mike. Mike Ventura. He brought supplies, made sure we had everything we needed."
The man hesitated.
"But Ventura is dead."
"He killed him," June Brody said.
"Who? Who killed him?"
"Agent Pendergast, FBI.
"The FBI?"
For the first time, the man raised his voice perceptibly.
"Yes, along with a captain in the NYPD, a woman, Haywood."
"What did they want?"
"The FBI agent was looking for the person who killed his wife. It had something to do with Project Aves, the secret avian flu team at Longitude. Slade had her killed years ago."
"Ah," the man said, as if understanding something new. He paused to inspect the fingernails of his left hand.
"Did the FBI agent know about Slade's still being alive?"
"No, not until he got to Spanish Island and Slade revealed himself."
"And then what? Did this FBI agent kill Slade as well?"
"In a way, Slade died."
"Why wasn't any of this in the news?"
"The FBI agent wanted to let the whole thing die in the swamp."
"When was this?"
"More than 6 months ago. March."
The man thought for a moment.
"What else?"
"That's all I know. Please, I've told you everything. I need to help my husband. Please, let us go."
"Everything?"
the man said, the slightest tinge of skepticism in his voice.
"Everything. What else could there be? She told him about Slade, about Spanish Island, about Project Aves. There was nothing else."
"I see."
The man looked at her for a moment. Then he lifted his gun and shot Carlton Brody between the eyes.
"God, no!"
June felt the body jump in her arms. She screamed.
The man slowly lowered the gun.
"Oh, no," June said, weeping. "Carlton!"
She could feel her husband's body slowly relaxing in her arms, a low, bellows-like sigh escaping his lungs. Blood was now coursing in regular rivulets from the back of his head, blackening the fabric of the love seat.
"Think very carefully," the man said. "Are you sure you've told me everything?"
"Yes," she sobbed, still cradling the body. "Everything."
"Very well."
The man sat still for a moment. He chuckled to himself.
"Moon pie, how vile."
Then he rose and, still moving slowly, walked toward the chair where June had been working on the nursing forms. He hovered over it, glanced down at the paperwork for a moment as he snugged the gun into his waistband. Then he picked up her half-finished bottle of Coke, poured the contents into a nearby flower pot, and with a sharp rap to the side of the table, broke off its mouth. He turned toward her, bottle held forward at hip level. June stared at the sharp edges of the broken neck, the glass glinting in the lamplight.
"But I've told you everything," she whispered.
"I understand," he said, nodding sympathetically.
"Yet one must be sure."
Chapter 23. Inverkirkton.
"Afternoon, Mr. Draper. And a fine afternoon it is, too."
"Indeed it is, Robbie."
"Did you have a good morning's ride, then?"
"I did. Cycled as far as Fenkirk and back."
"Well, that's a wee distance."
"I wanted to take advantage of the good weather. I'll be off in the morning."
"I'll hate to lose your trade, Mr. Draper, but I figured you'd be on your way soon. Lucky to have had you this long."
"If you would just prepare the bill for me, I'll square accounts."
"Right away, sir."
"You've been very hospitable. I think I'll go up to my room and wash up, then pop over to the Half Moon for one last bite of steak and kidney pudding."
"Very good, sir."
Upstairs, Esterhazy washed his hands in the sink and dried them on a towel. For the first time in weeks, he felt tremendous relief. All this time, he'd been unable to convince himself that Pendergast was dead. His search for Pendergast had developed into an obsession, consuming his waking thoughts, tormenting his dreams. But somehow, the visit to Glim's home had, at long last, convinced him that Pendergast was dead.